You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach talking the first place New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter, Anthony DiComo. The Mets did not have a first-round pick this year. First of all, just kind of broadly, how did that affect their approach, their strategy as they went through the early rounds of the draft?
I mean, it didn't affect it that much other than the guys who you know without a shadow of a doubt are going in the top 10, 15, 20. You don't really have to bother scouting those guys. But beyond that, I don't think it really affected what they did. The guy they took in the first round is a guy they had their eye on as one of the, probably, you know, I would guess probably about 5 or 10 guys they liked. And, you know, in that spot, and you can sort of target in a sense, but when you get to the second round and the third round and beyond, it's hard to really say for sure what's going to be there, what's going to be available, because teams' draft boards can tend to be wildly different than their own. But, you know, the Mets like what they did. They added in the draft in general, they added quite a few pitchers. About 3/4 of their picks were pitchers, but they also took some big bats at the beginning, including their first round pick, or their second round pick, Desmond Lindsay, an outfielder who they like a lot. So you know, it was, well, obviously they would have liked to have had a first round pick. That was a calculated risk that they took at the time when they decided to sign Michael Kadire and forfeit it. They thought Michael Kadire was worth it, and if last night's walk off home run was any indication, and if the past month for Kadire, when he's really been rounding into form, was any indication, I think they're starting to see some dividends on that investment.
The first pick, Desmond Lindsay, fell a bit, evidently due to health. First of all, are there any concerns about his health going forward, or is it just the fact that people didn't get to see him that much, and so it's hard to jump too much on a guy you didn't get to see play as much?
Yeah, I don't think the Mets would have taken if they had any serious concerns about his health. And, you know, you look at the guy who his opinions on him tend to be all over the place. He was not in MLB.com's top 200 draft prospects going in. He was not in Baseball America's top 100, but some other publications, Baseball Prospectus, for example, had him pretty high. So it's clear that this is a guy with a lot of tools. He's got power. He's got speed. Will that translate? It's tough to say. It's always tough to say. When you get these high school guys, the Mets have had sort of mixed success. They've taken guys similar to him high in the draft, and by that I mean high school guys without necessarily big track records, guys who are considered riskier picks. You know, famously, Sandy Ellison's first pick as Mets GM was Brandon Nimmo, who has sort of run the gamut himself from a prospect who sort of raised eyebrows at the time when they made that pick to developing into a pretty reasonably decent prospect. He's hurt now, but going forward, they still like what they have there. And they've made their share of risky picks in the past. You know, one thing about the Mets and Sandy Alderson and Paul DePodesta, who heads up the draft, is they do not cave to public pressure at all with this stuff. They really do not, you know, sort of go with the grain in terms of what other teams, what scouts, what media, what sort of the popular perception is with these picks. They have their own scouts. They trust them fully, and you know, they're not afraid to reach for a guy if they think it's the best guy available. They're not afraid to take a guy in the second round, for example, who might have fell to the third or fourth if they hadn't picked him then. They like him a lot, and that goes for a lot of their picks. It's just it's a team that's very independent thinking with amateur scouting and that sort of thing, and you saw that a little bit in the draft.
You noted the very high number of pitchers they took. You know, baseball is not something, it's obviously not something like the NFL where you go in and you say, well, we need a cornerback and we need a left guard, and so we're going to take those for the first two picks. With that said, there can be guiding principles. So was the number of pitchers just the way it happened at each individual pick, or was that by design to some extent?
Well, I don't think it was just the way it happened. I mean, you can just look at Sandy Alderson's track record. He's built this thing, what the Mets are now, over the past 4 years. He has built it completely through pitching, and not just pitching, but pitching depth. At every turn, whenever he's had an opportunity to trade a pitcher, maybe help out an offense that has been consistently below average to bad under his tenure, he has refrained from doing so. The Mets are convinced, whereas a lot of teams these days say, you know, look at the high number of Tommy John surgeries and pitchers getting hurt in general and say, well, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. We might as well trade these guys when they have value and so on and so forth. The Mets have really taken the opposite tack. And they're not the only team that says this, but their philosophy is really, no, we're going to hang on to every pitching prospect and we're going to amass every pitching prospect we possibly can, knowing that a huge number of them are not going to pan out. A huge number of them are going to get hurt, et cetera, et cetera. And the hope is that a small number of them make it through the ranks and make it to the big leagues. And that's what we're seeing this season when the Mets have had more than their share of pitching injuries and they've been able to bring up a Noah Syndergaard or a Rafael Montero before he got hurt himself. And, you know, we're still looking down now and waiting to see when Steven Matz is going to come up. So that's sort of the Mets philosophy, and that starts 100% with the draft, drafting guys. And the other side of that also is one thing that Paul DePodesta noted was the Mets aren't necessarily a team that's done a lot in the international market in recent years, but what they have done has been almost exclusively position players. So a lot of those high upside guys in their minors, guys they've given reasonably big bonuses to, were hitters. So they wanted to supplement that a little bit more with pitching in the draft as well.
To switch to the 2015 club, for real, did they ditch the six-man because Terry Collins was tired of talking about it?
I mean, that's a very simple way to put it. I don't think tired of talking about it to the media necessarily, or tired of talking about it to his wife, as he joked at the time. But I do think he was definitely tired about having pitchers come into his office and say, what's the deal? I don't think when the Mets decided to go to a six-man, I don't think they envisioned as much backlash from their own staff as they did. And not that every Matt Harvey and Jacob DeGrom and so on and so forth was coming into the office and just saying what's going on and complaining constantly, but there was definitely a perception that the pitchers weren't pleased with this. Pitchers weren't necessarily trashing the idea on the record and things like that, but no one was going out of his way to support it. And I think, you know, at some point the Mets just sort of threw up their hands and said, you know what, while we still have to limit the innings of Harvey and DeGrom and Steven Matz when he comes up and Syndergaard, things happen over the course of the season, and maybe it'll become a problem later this summer. Possibly it won't. If other things come up, if a guy gets hurt, and so on and so forth. They have the personnel to make it work with a five-man. Dylan Jeek is the perfect guy to sort of serve in that swingman role and make some spot starts if needed. Once Rafael Montero gets healthy, he can do the same thing. Well, personally, and I've said this on this podcast before, I think the six-man was sort of the ideal in terms of being able to limit innings for pitchers and would have been a smoother way to do it. These are human beings, too, and if you have six unhappy pitchers, it's not necessarily better than having five content pitchers and maybe one unhappy pitcher and doing things that way. So there was definitely it definitely went beyond the X's and O's of baseball and how best to do this thing logistically. It definitely was more of a clubhouse culture type thing and keeping guys happy.
Was this really surprising? It's my understanding they at least discussed this some with at least some of these guys in advance. So they had to know, I presume they knew some of the reservations in advance. It really stands out to me. There are so many ways you could handle this. You say, well, we're going to slot somebody in one time and see how it goes and do that again, and suddenly you're there. But to announce, hey, we're doing this, and we're going to be doing this till August, and then say, nope, never mind, we're not, it raises some flags to me. So I guess the question I'm asking here, was it really that surprising? And if not, again, how did this go from we are doing this to no, never mind?
I mean, I think it's just sort of what I just said. There's a couple parts to it. I don't think management totally foresaw the unhappiness that was going to come out of this in the pitchers. I don't think the pitchers maybe totally foresaw how much they were going to dislike their new routine. And you got to realize these are guys who are very much trained to take it day by day, to take it, never to look too far ahead, et cetera. And a couple of these guys went out that first time to the six-man rotation and had bad starts. And was that because of the six-man rotation? Probably not. But when you're looking at things through that narrow of a lens, I think, a couple of guys might have put two and two together and said, hey, maybe the six-man rotation isn't good for me. And then the complaints grow a little louder, the grumbling grows a little louder, and the Mets say, you know what, forget it. Let's just try and keep people happy, and we'll worry about later when it comes. If I was in management shoes, would I have just said, tough, this is how we're doing it, this is the best way? Maybe, but I don't have to deal with pitchers banging on my office door and saying I'm not happy. So, it's easy to sit here and say this is a managerial goof or snafu or whatever it might be. But Terry Collins and his staff are the guys who have to deal with these pitchers every day. And, if they think they made a mistake going through the six-man rotation and want to take it back to five, that's their prerogative. Now, it's just going to make things harder for them throughout the summer when they have to start limiting these innings. And it could make for an ugly situation if this team continues to compete and you have a Washington Nationals 2012 Steven Strasburg situation on your hands. The Mets do not want to be in that situation where they're just going to have to shut someone down. So they're going to have to get creative now. If they refuse to go to a six-man now, they're going to have to get creative throughout the rest of the summer.
All right. Well, Anthony Nocomo, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.